everyone, and welcome to the Commercial Roofing Connections podcast. I'm your moderator, Justine Christopher, and my guest today is Joel Elsia, who is the Director of Facilities at Curo Financial Technologies, and we will be discussing the out-of-sight, keep-in-mind philosophy of roof maintenance. Hi, Joel. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Hi, Justine. Thanks for having me.
We appreciate you joining us, and I'm looking forward to a conversation about not only your career, but your facility management style, as well as roofing.
Sounds good. I hope I don't bore you.
Oh, I'm sure you won't. But let's begin with you sharing how you got started in facility management industry.
I've been in the industry for a while, and it's sort of a long story, but I started out on the property management side of things. I used to own a property management company that specialized in homeowner associations of all things. My company managed about 80 different homeowner associations, and while we didn't have to manage a lot of roofs, we were responsible for making sure anybody who replaced their roof through the HOA, and we were responsible for that approval process. We also were responsible for all the grounds, pools, any property within the HOAs. We had to take care of those items too. So sort of a backdoor into facilities management, but I did that for about 7 or 8 years and then wound up at Curo doing what I do now.
Oh, that's awesome. What was the transition like from one to the other for you?
It was really pretty easy. I mean, it was basically the same job, just a different type of assets. Instead of handling a lot of green space property that you'd find in large homeowner associations, it was more building systems and HVAC systems and items that you'd find within a commercial building. And then also too, the retail element was a little bit different, but it's sort of the same. It was just a smaller scale.
I wanted to ask you, what are some of the best practices you have learned throughout your facility management career that you wish someone would have shared with you early on?
Well, that's a good question. I've gotten a lot of advice over the years about facilities management from a lot of different people in the industry. I think, you know, one of the things that I wish that I'd have been told early on was to cut some, you know, to not get so immersed in the job that you get burned out easy. In this industry is a 24/7 endeavor, and you get calls at 2 a.m. or 6 a.m. for emergency type issues, and it's easy to kind of get into a mindset where you're locked in and you're just go, go, go all the time. As crazy as it might sound, it's important to take some time away, carve out a little time for yourself, and when you can, when it makes the most sense, when you're needed during those late nights or early mornings, it doesn't feel so much like an obligation. Wish I'd have been told that early on, because like I said, it's easy to kind of get locked in and you're so focused that, you know, you forget to take a little time away, and that impacts everything. It impacts your work life, it impacts your personal life, and you know, you need to be happy in both.
I agree. Especially these times with the pandemic and a lot of people working from home, I'm sure taking time away from work has become even harder for some because you're working from home, or as some like to say, you're now living at work. I can definitely understand that you need to take that personal time to not engage with work 24/7. Although, like you said, a facility management role, you're definitely going to be called upon at any time of the day for any type of emergency that has to deal with your building.
Yeah, and it's a little different in this role because, you know, most of our employees are working from home right now. I'd say greater than 90%. But my facilities team, we're still showing up at the office every day because we have to make sure that the roofs aren't leaking, and you know, that systems are operating properly, and you know, there's no issue with people trying to get into our corporate buildings when they're not supposed to be, and that sort of thing. So it's odd because we're still at the office, and there really isn't anybody else here. When we inspect the buildings pretty much on a daily basis, when you're in the building after about 5 minutes and you're walking by empty cubicles and empty offices, you start to feel like you're the only person left on the planet. So it's a little depressing, but you know, hopefully we'll get back to some semblance of normal before too long.
I think everyone's hoping to get back to simpler times. Oh, could you tell us a little bit more about Truro Financial, like the number of locations you have, what aspects of the building are you responsible for, or any other information you'd like to share?
Yeah, sure. Truro Financial has been around for about 20 years now, and we have 430 locations approximately in the U.S. and Canada, about 1 million square feet that my facilities department is responsible for. We're a little unusual, I think, from a lot of facilities departments because we don't just manage the retail spaces. We don't just manage our stores. We also manage a pretty significant number of corporate buildings. And we have 8 corporate buildings in Wichita, and we have a corporate space in Kansas City, a corporate space in Chicago, and a corporate space in Toronto. So all of those large commercial buildings, we're responsible for the maintenance at all those locations also. And that includes, like I mentioned, the roofs, the HVAC systems, you know, the plumbing, the landscaping. I mean, pretty much anything that you can think of that would require any kind of a maintenance at a real estate level, my team is responsible for. I like it because it's fast-paced. There's always something exciting or crazy happening that, you know, it's just never a dull moment. We've had, you know, over the course of this COVID stuff, you know, we've had to disinfect locations overnight on an emergency basis. And we've had stores that were looted. We've had fires set. I mean, it's been really exciting lately. I mean, maybe a little more exciting than I'd like. But like I said, it makes it, you know, no day is the same. And when you come in, it's always kind of like, well, you know, what am I going to get to deal with today? So anyway, small box, we're in the small box arena. All of our stores are roughly around 2,500 square feet. And then the largest facility we have is a call center here in Wichita that's 40,000 square feet. And it houses about 400 employees. So, you know, it's, you know, we handle a broad spectrum when it comes to the facilities that we maintain.
Wow. So it sounds like you have a lot on your plate. How many people are part of your facility management team?
So I have 3 on my team, which we are really busy because of that. I have one facility manager based in Canada, and we have approximately 200 locations there that she manages. And then I have 2 facility managers here in the States, and one of them primarily focuses on Texas, where we've got about 100 locations, and then the other one handles everything outside of Texas. And then I try to fill in the gaps whenever we're, you know, whenever we've got a special project or we're spread a little thin. But you know, we've been able to be, I think we're really efficient. And I think one reason that we are efficient is because we have great service provider partners. It allows us to get a lot more done because we're able to utilize the partners we have that are providing maintenance for us on certain items like Simon. You know, it makes it easier to maintain those assets. And when something comes up, we don't have to spend a ton of time on it because our partners are taking care of a lot of those items for us already. That's kind of my secret ingredient, I guess you could say.
Yeah, definitely. Great partnerships definitely make something or your job a lot easier, I'm sure, with all the responsibilities you have for that many locations in 2 different countries. Throughout your time as the director of facilities at Truro, what have been some of your biggest challenges when it comes to roofing?
Well, I think initially we didn't spend a lot of time looking at roofing, and it was kind of out of sight, out of mind. It's, you don't really think about roofing until you have a problem. And so I think kind of the first hurdle is just making sure that that's on the radar and that you have some sort of a plan put together for roofing. So I think developing a plan, trying to figure out, you know, what kind of condition your roofs are in, and then laying out a maintenance plan and then a replacement plan, I think is super important. And I don't know that it's challenging as much as, I mean, I guess it depends on how you're addressing those needs. But like I mentioned, having a relationship with Simon's made those aspects of it pretty easy. And I think we have a great handle now on what condition our roofs are in, you know, when they've been, you know, last inspected, when we anticipate having to replace them. The great thing about that is being able to forecast that and take that information into my vice president or our accounting team and say, hey, listen, you know, for our CapEx budget this coming year, you know, we expect to replace 8 roofs in the U.S. and 2 in Canada, and this is what we're anticipating the cost to be. You can lay that plan out for a number of years, and it really makes it easy. But getting to that point, I guess, could be challenging if you're just trying to do it all on your own. You know, Simon's made it really easy for us.
I'm glad to hear that. Definitely, you know, keeping an active plan is a big deal for you for roofing. For other, you know, assets in your portfolio, how do you prioritize your capital projects?
Well, I think, you know, what we've been doing here lately is focusing on the age of the asset. And the industry that we're in isn't new. You know, facilities management's been around for a long time. And so there's not like a, you know, a new approach to this, I don't think. So we focus on age primarily, and then probably the condition of the asset, and then probably the performance of the asset. Now, if we start seeing an issue with the performance of an asset, let's say we have a roof or a rooftop unit that is only 8 years old, but we start having significant issues with it where we're spending money on it on a regular basis, then rather than the age, we probably look at the performance aspect of it, and we start trying to make a decision, you know, do we want to spend any more money on this asset, or should we go ahead and pull the trigger and replace it, even though it really hasn't hit our age, you know, our age expectation in terms of life on that asset. But those are kind of how we prioritize.
So you're looking at the age of the asset, the condition, and then the performance of it to decide how to plan your capital expenditures.
Yeah, and we really try to keep track of how much money we spend on what asset at what location, and it becomes apparent pretty quick to us when, you know, we feel like we've spent more than what we think that asset is worth. You know, we earmark that asset for replacement usually the following year. And it's not, we could replace it sooner than that, but we operate, you know, on a calendar year, and our capital budgets are developed probably, you know, in the fourth quarter normally. So when we start seeing an asset fail, we're usually, you know, just a few months or 3 or 4 or 5 months at the most away from putting in a capital request for whatever asset we want to replace. So it's, you know, we can limp along until we have to replace it unless it just completely dies on us. And then in that case, we really don't have a choice but to just go ahead and bite the bullet and replace the equipment.
What kind of tools do you rely on for budgeting and planning?
We're a Service Channel user. Log all of our assets in Service Channel, and that helps us track the spend in a lot of cases. But we're also relying on information. I'm not a big portal fan. It seems like every service provider has their own portal these days. And so when you look at the number of portals that we have, you know, we're going to have access to, it gets a little daunting. But there are some service provider portals that I find interesting. And what I guess what I appreciate more is when I don't necessarily have to access the portal, but I have a representative from the company that will provide me with the data so I don't have to go search it out in their portal, because they're probably more of an expert at using their system than I am. So it's great to have somebody that can pull the data and say, hey, here's where you're at, and these are the assets that we feel like maybe you need to give some attention to. Either immediately or this coming year. But, you know, again, the service providers that we utilize are really instrumental when it comes to providing us data. I like for people to be proactive and help guide me to make good decisions for our assets. I feel like, in a way, that's what we're paying for. It's sort of a letdown when you have a business relationship with somebody, but they're not giving you any feedback. Or and when you know, feedback could be in the form of how we're handling our business. I mean, I always like, you know, if we're approaching our assets the wrong way, I always like somebody to tell me, hey, you know, you might want to consider doing this instead of the way you're doing it. And I'm never offended by that. Maybe some people would be, but I'm looking for feedback from our service providers. And I know we get a lot of feedback from Simon.
Yeah, you had mentioned earlier that, you know, facility management isn't something new, but since you've been in this role for so long and in the industry for so long, what are some of the things you've seen, like you mentioned with reporting, how has technology changed and how has it helped you in your current role?
Well, the facilities management has become so data driven, you know, and you have to be able to anymore, I guess that's the kind of the difference is it's becoming more and more data driven. And so you have to be able to be sort of a data bug and get into those details to figure out, you know, if there are any trends or any issues that you need to be concerned about. And sometimes what I think I ought to be looking at isn't necessarily what I should be looking at. So it's good to get feedback from your service providers on, you know, how they, what metrics they use to evaluate, you know, the assets that they're helping you manage. You know, often cases we hear about problems. For example, our stores will call and they'll say, hey, this service provider didn't perform well. And you might get three phone calls indicating that that service provider hasn't performed well at three different locations. And when you're taking those phone calls, it's a negative, obviously, and you don't want to get those phone calls. But if the service provider has done 2,000 calls for you during the course of the year and you've only heard three negative calls on them, then, you know, you need to be able to distinguish that situation. And you certainly, you know, we understand over here that, you know, there are going to be hiccups anytime you're providing service for anybody. I mean, we provide service to our stores and we have hiccups here as a department. So, but you need to be able to determine, hey, is this a routine situation that we're having, or are we just hearing about the three bad apples in a bunch of 2,000? You know, be able to make, you know, good decisions based upon all the data, the negative data that you're receiving. So you have to have take a broad look at everything that's coming in. And that's the same. It applies to the cost too. I mean, you know, occasionally we feel like we pay more for a certain thing than we should have. But when you take a holistic view of a service provider, you know, and all of the requests that they've handled and what they've charged you, maybe the picture is much more reasonable. So not everybody hits the ball every time up at the plate. You know, we realize that, and it's important to keep that in mind, I think, when you're looking at the data.
We're a very technology forward and data driven company as well. And we try to improve on that, you know, not only to be more transparent to our customers, like you said, when you do have those hiccups, you can take a look back and see what went wrong really and correct it right then and there if you have the technology to do so.
Yeah, I don't see how, I don't know how you survive as a business without using that technology anymore. It just seems like it's really a necessity. And, you know, when we're evaluating service providers for a certain trade, I know that's one of the things that we consider, you know, how do they use technology in their business, and how can we apply that to what we're doing?
Exactly. Well, Joel, thanks for sharing all of that great insight. I really enjoyed hearing your perspective on roofing preventative maintenance, and I'm sure all of our listeners did as well. Thanks for taking the time to join us. And to everyone else, be sure to check out Commercial Roofing Connections on LinkedIn.
Thanks, Justine, and thanks to Simon. I appreciate you guys thinking of me.
Have a great day, everyone.